fellow fans of Idaho and Pacific Northwest history, my name's Mark Iverson. I'm a historian who would like to be your guide through the past, where history is never simple. It can be light, it can be dark, it can be happy, it can be sad, and everywhere in between. So let me be your guide on the Ida History Podcast.
All right, this is Mark Iverson, and I am bringing to you the Ida History Podcast, I'd say 2.0, because I am now a solo man doing the Ida History Podcast, and Jeff has gone on to become more of an author than he already is. He's published 3 books now, and, you know, I wish him well. He was a good co-host, and we worked really hard on those episodes. So from here on out, we're going to do more interviews. We're going to talk to people living the history. We want to focus on unique personalities, people with unique tales, people that are either living and working in the history field, or just live in the history, out where the history happens in the communities of Idaho. So tonight we are, or I am. Let me get used to that. We are recording in a old building, circa 1910 in Mountain Home, Idaho. And, it's an old hotel. And, I'm with Callista Hodeck.
Yes, Callista Hodeck.
Hodeck. Mm-hmm. Okay. Mm-hmm. Excuse my...
No, you're totally fine.
...butchering of your name. Before we get into more about you, why are we recording from your apartment in this old building?
We are recording from my apartment because it is full of spirits.
Right.
Yeah.
It's spooky season.
It is very much spooky season. And of course, I like to decorate for spooky season. Right. But it does have a few bumps in the night sometimes.
Right.
Or whistling in the night, which we will talk about.
And weird things with your cat, right?
And weird things with my cat. And embroidery hoops that like to move.
Yep. Yeah. You are an embroiderer.
I am an embroiderer.
And other than that, so tell us about yourself, why you're in Mountain Home, what you do in Boise.
Yes. So I am a high school history and social studies teacher out here in Mountain Home. I'm in my 6th year of teaching. I am also an undergraduate student from Boise State, but a graduate student in public history right now.
Wow, that's teaching and...
teaching and grad school at the same time. So yes, in the front lines. And right now I'm interning at the Idaho State Museum, where I am doing, more of a focus in collections processing and specifically textiles.
Yeah, and you're learning how to curate textiles and the dress collection.
Correct, yes. I'm working on a family dress collections right now. Just started putting that away, and I'm learning how to stuff and put, garments away.
That's
for
right.
A few
taxidermy,
years.
Folks.
Stuffing.
Oh,
away.
You meant clothing.
Yeah, stuffing clothing. Okay. So crumpling the acid-free tissue,
right.
Finding a seam, and making sure, I've been hanging out with, corsets with whalebone in it and 1920s dresses. So really, really interesting textiles that have an Idaho story to them.
If it wasn't for my love of ivory, whalebone would really be my choice. Just kidding. I love elephants. Don't get mad at me, people. That sounds fascinating. I tried to, learn how to curate dresses and textiles when I worked for the Department of Arts and History at the City of Boise.
Mm-hmm.
And Nicole.
Yes.
What do you know Nicole's full name?
Nicole Inglaterra.
Yeah, she showed me how to, or at least attempted to show me how to curate clothing with the acid paper and try to, fill in.
She is brilliant.
She's really
brilliant
good.
Brilliant woman. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
So tell her hi.
Yes, she's a wonderful mentor.
Yeah.
Yep.
So she's your mentor.
Yes, she is my mentor.
Oh, very
at the
cool.
Idaho
yeah.
State Museum.
Tell us what's up.
I will, absolutely.
I'm not doing any curating, but I appreciate those who do. But so now we've talked about you. Let's talk about how you came to live in this haunted hotel in Mountain Home, Idaho.
It was kind of a lucky happenstance. I got the job of being a teacher in the summer of 2018, right after I'd graduated from Boise State. And so I'd gotten the job first. And so one of the things that I did next, of course, was try to find apartments.
Right.
And so I just typed in apartments in Mountain Home, and this was one of the very first ones. And so I grabbed it immediately because I believe like an airman had moved out, maybe, or like was planning on moving out. And so I did a tour like I think the next day, and it was a legit, you know, apartment, and I got it, and I've not let go of it since.
It's a super cool building and apartment. It's on the south side of the Oregon shoreline. Well, the Union Pacific owns it now. But, you know, the downtown is just across the railroad tracks to the north. And, yeah, it's kind of this amazing hotel, old building that's just sitting right there, you know. And it was the, now it was the Jose Joe, okay, now I'm going to say it right.
You are going to say it right.
Bengoechea.
Nice. Yes. Bengoechea.
Bengoechea.
You got it.
Yeah. And he was a Basque guy. Basque businessman, sheepherder.
One of the wealthiest men in Mountain Home at one
right,
time.
Right. Yes. At one time. And Mountain Home, basically, okay, I'll let you tell it. But what I understand is it Mountain Home gets its start, at least its origins go back to what's now a ruin, but it's still there, Rattlesnake Station.
Yes. It was a post office at Rattlesnake. Post office at Rattlesnake.
And this was on the Overland Trail that people would take, especially, I think it was pertinent in the 1860s.
Yes.
Especially after the Civil War.
Right. And Mountain Home has a very rich sheepherding history with it, which is where we get a lot of the Basque history with the boarding houses.
Right.
And so that's kind of where Jose Bengoechea gets his start with his wife, who was 34 years younger, Margarita.
Mm-hmm. And that was normal.
And that was normal, coming from the Basque country. They had married, and they had started one of the most successful hotels in Mountain Home, which is the Bengoechea Hotel.
Okay, yeah, here I have it, Bengoechea.
Yep, you got it.
And, I mean, this was really quite the hotel. You know, it was advertised.
It was the place to be.
Right? And that was despite sort of some discrimination of the Basque culture.
Right, and fear of diversity from this time.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's this time period that reflects in America where, you know, you have the racial hierarchy all over the world, but here in America it has its own characteristics. And so you like with Italians and the Spanish, the Basque, you would have this sort of, the Irish too. Are they white? Do they pass? And then slowly they start to, you know, and they incorporate themselves into America. But, you know, there's also some, you know, if you're on your own and you just, you know, immigrated from the Basque country in the north of Spain, right?
Right.
And I believe the let's see, I'm going to say this, Bizkaia was the Basque province in northern Spain. And so our friend Joe, Jose Bengoechea.
I think they Americanized their first names, at least. It was Joe and Margaret,
right.
I think is what they Americanized.
Okay.
Yeah.
And,
is it Americanized or Anglicized?
Anglicized?
Anglicized, yeah.
I don't care either way. It makes sense. but in 1881, he comes out and he goes to Elko, Nevada, and he starts, you know, herding sheep and buying up sheep, from what I understand. And he eventually moves to Mountain Home.
Yes.
And then he starts getting more serious about sheep. That sounds wrong.
He does partner up with his brother, too. So he does have a little bit of sense of that community here in Mountain Home, as far as partnering up with a lot of his family members and then, like, going out with basically his employees and doing the work.
Well, and so this enclave of Basque kind of revolve around this area where we are right now on the south side of the tracks. And you have the old handball court. This is kind of the Basque district.
The Basque block, yes.
And so this was an important hub for people that are immigrating to Idaho, which many did, especially turn of the century. But so by the time 1910 rolls around, he has quite the capital built up, and so he builds this, right?
Yes, exactly.
And what else? Tell us more about him that you know.
From what I know, in the left-hand portions where the flower shop is, used to be the hotel lobby in the foyer where people would be greeted.
Right.
There was a kitchen in the back portions of what would be the building.
Yeah.
And so, like, people could dine. This was one of the, it was right next to the railroad, and so this would be like a nice place to stop to have lunch with your family, and it was really nice dining. And so there was also like on the side that where I live on, that would be like a, like kind of like a dance hall.
Right. Yeah.
And so this was also a place for entertainment and for dances, and it was a place for dances well into, I believe, the 50s is what I have heard.
Well, so yeah, and you know, that's the fun thing about, and sometimes the maddening thing about studying property, is that what was it and when was it that? Right. You know, I know there was a sales room in the back, or they called it an essay room, but it was basically a room where salesmen could set up their wares and mm-hmm. people could come to them. You know, and you get the traffic from the train and also locals. And so it was this central location where they could advertise that and sell their stuff. And so that was good for them.
Yes.
But then, yeah, like you said, it was a dance hall.
It was a dance hall. I do think you taught me this. It was also one of the first hotels to have, like, private bathrooms.
Right. Yeah. If you could afford the fanciest rooms right. on top, you could have your own private bathroom.
I think I did the math. My apartment probably housed like maybe about 6 to 8 rooms.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. They were kind of like smaller rooms.
Well, because they had, you know, you're looking at this apartment, you're like, how did this fit 28 rooms?
Right.
And you're like, yeah. Oh, well, they must
it
have been
cut
small.
Up. Exactly. They were really small.
And so, yeah, there were 28 rooms eventually. And so, yeah, eventually it was bought out by a man named Halverson, and it became the Mountain Home Hotel. And so, Bengochea, Jose Joe, he didn't own the hotel that long, but it became the Mountain Home Hotel, and I was happy for that because, you know, Bengochea doesn't seem all that hard once you start getting going. But anyway, but back to Joe. By 1917, you know, he has sheep herds. And
it's World War One.
And it's World War One, right?
Yes, and so. With all of the sheep, like, what is it? The wool? Yes, sorry. Wool. All the wool.
The fur.
It's not fur, it's not skin. What is it? It's wool. With all of the wool that he sells for World War One, he makes such an economic boom, and so he is really thriving during this time. But as we know, with World War One, once that ends...
Right. I don't think somebody who... I don't know who was advising him or what advice he got, but, you know, he was buying up sheep like nobody's business because he's making so much money. And then the war ends, and there's not the same price for sheep out there. So he's over, you know.
He loses a lot of his fortune that way.
And, well, some say that this, in part, and I bet it's true.
I bet it's a starting point, at least.
To his death.
Yes. Of some sources say that he died of a broken heart.
Right.
Of losing his fortune. Well, losing his fortune and also like that sense of identity. Right.
Well, right. But he was, like you said, he was the founder of this community pretty mm-hmm. much. And so you had a lot of other Basques that depended on him, from the women that tended to work in the hotel and the boarding houses.
Yes.
And the sheep herders who invested in other sheep in his company.
Also, like, one of the quotations I remember from him, and it's, like, one of the very few quotations that is out there, like, he is very prideful. He is able to afford a car during this time. And so one of the, I think a reporter had asked him, like, what is your favorite type of car? And his reply was, a new one.
Right,
yeah. So, I mean, that's now going to be stripped away after... He loses all of his
Yeah, that's
fortune.
A pretty Mac thing to say.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, man, it's a new one. You
a
know?
New one, exactly.
That's badass.
That is very short-lived.
Right, and that's unfortunate. And so his wife is a widow fairly early.
Yes.
And they have a couple of kids, right?
They have 3 children.
Okay.
Eva, who comes back up. And then I don't even know the brothers' names. I know Jose is another one of the brothers. But Eva is their first child, and that's who I love and adore. we'll talk about Eva.
So, so they're the children, and he and his wife. I read an article that said in 1915, when this man Halverson takes over the hotel ownership, that they were renovating rooms to turn into his living room, and that's eventually where he dies. he died at home. Yeah. That's what they said. But, you know, there was a house further down, so
right, we have
there's some questions.
Yeah, there's some questions there as far as did they live in a beautiful mansion that was close to, close to the hotel, or are they living in the quarters in the hotel that were specifically made for them?
Right. Regardless, I mean, it would make sense for him to be one of the spirits that are
definitely
reported
so.
Around here. Either he died in here and loved this place, or he loved this place, died close by, and, you know, still, you know, resides here in some fashion.
Yes.
But this place was really important to, you know, the Basque of Idaho. And so you had these, you know, these sheep herders. Real quick, I just want to mention, like, what he was a part of. And, you know, the Basques, they come out here, and they're not expert sheep herders or anything. They'd have small flocks of sheep, if you call it a flock. I know it's a bird thing, but, like,
oh, no, I think you're right. It's flocks of sheep.
Right. And so you'd have these flocks of sheep. And so, but over here, they take on, if a sheep herder or a rancher, owner of sheep, I'm not sure what you call them, but they have hundreds, maybe thousands of sheep, and you have to go out into the wilderness with these things and wander around the public lands, and sometimes at odds with cattlemen, and you were lonely. It was kind of crazy out there.
Mm-hmm.
People went nuts, right?
I live alone myself, and so, like, I would definitely probably not be able to handle that type of, like, alone work.
You know, I mean, I've been out in the mountains on my own with my dog and I, yeah, which is what they were doing, and, you know, especially at night when the sun starts going down and you hear the wind going through the trees and stuff, it's pretty, but it's also kind of spooky.
It gets to you, yeah.
Yeah, so, yeah, I mean, and this is what people do to make their money when they first come here, the men. You know, women also, they don't have it easy.
No, a lot of domestic work. That
right.
was very laborious during this time. I know that we had also talked about as far as, like, having to do a lot of, like, the laundry and
right.
the care and the cleaning for all of, like, these 28 rooms that were in here.
Well, and
Margarita did not have it easy.
No, she didn't. And I was reading about running the Bass boarding houses in Boise. And they're talking about how they had 2 hours off, and you know,
that's right.
The yep. men were chomping at the bit to hit on these women when they're home. And so this one woman was describing how she went on a date, and they go to the Egyptian theater,
yes,
and she falls asleep,
right,
because
on the
she's
date,
so tired.
She's so dog tired.
Well, because they wake up at like 4:35 in the morning. They clean clothes all morning because, you know, that's what they do for the work outfits.
Laundry takes a long time.
Oh my goodness.
And it's one of the most, like, with doing, like, with tan textiles, with it's very cracking of your knuckles, and you're like,
yeah.
Also, you're probably sometimes you're doing it outside, so you're also, like, open to the ailments, so it's just laborious work.
You know, when men get talking manliness, you know, they're like, women's work. I've done
well,
very little women's work as it was back then, and I'm like, that's not easy.
I love Gold Rush history because these washwomen that would go over into California, they would really upcharge in laundry because the men didn't want to do this.
And so that's what...
Hard work, yeah.
Right, and so that's what these women are doing in a place like this early on and other boarding houses. And these are my point being is, like, when the men come in and the women are here, that's when they're working their utmost. They're cleaning the place constantly. They're cooking constantly. They're doing constant laundry. The men are hitting on them because they want to have kids, and they've been alone for, months. And so when they all get together, these hotels and these places become super important hubs of a developing enclave of immigrants in the new world.
Right. And also spiritually, that creates a lot of energy.
Right.
When you have exactly. so many people visiting with so many different backgrounds. And of course, there are lots of romances that happen in this hotel, but also a lot of disputes that happen in this hotel.
Right.
Throughout the
yeah.
time.
And so that's a perfect segue. I just want to say quickly that, you know, the Basques would go into other professions, but, you know, that was their bedrock at first, the sheep business. sheep herding. But then you would get, and then they get into mining, and they build canals, the New York Canal System and some of the canals throughout the valley, Boise Valley, and, you know, the lumber industry and logging and stuff like that. But sheep is the, is sheep herding is their main thing. And basically, though, this is a really important place with a lot of energy. And so, you know, there are a few things tied to this place that could lead to one to believe that this is a, there's some root to these hauntings.
Yes.
So we talked about Joe. We
talked about Joe. I feel like we can talk about Eva, but also I'm sure that there were a few other spirits that kind of like dwell these halls a little bit.
Well, yeah. So there was one person named Victoria, and it's pronounced, it's spelled U-R-Q-U-I-D-I, but I believe it said Victoria Urquidy.
Yes, I believe so. And this name does pop up quite a bit in Mountain Home history, so it is a family Basque name.
Okay, yeah, and it's a cool name. I've seen that on quite a few, you know, tombstones, you know, and in the archives. But basically, it says that on February 12th, 1926, she dies of a short illness in the hotel. It doesn't say where in the hotel. You do have a female spirit.
I do have a female spirit.
So I don't know. But then on her death certificate, it says she died of a cerebral hemorrhage. For 5 days, she had suffered from that. So you're wondering, like, well, does one get a hemorrhage? Was it like a... What do they call them? When it bursts in your brain?
A stroke.
Well, a stroke, but like an aneurysm.
An aneurysm, yes.
Is that something, or is it like, did she get blunt force trauma? That wouldn't be very much of an illness, but...
No.
That's one route, perhaps, to a female spirit. It could be worse. But you said Eva. Where do you get that name?
Eva. Well, before we get to Eva, there is one other story I wanted to mention before we get to Eva, but there is one of there used to be a bar down in the basement.
Oh, yes, a bar in the basement.
The bar in the basement. So,
do you know when that was, maybe?
No, the only time I heard the story was when the antique store owner was here for about probably 4 years. She said it was probably like... 1910, 1920s. Yeah. She said it was probably in the 20s.
Well, it makes sense because they had a restaurant up above.
Up
you know,
above,
you eat a bar
yeah.
somewhere. But that was acceptable dining. And then down below, you know, the men would go down or they would bring drinks up, I would imagine.
Yes. So the story was, it was like either a sheep herder or a cowboy, some rough and tough man, was kind of having an argument with somebody else. And I believe it was over a woman.
Sure.
And they had gotten into a fist fight, and the cowboy gets hit in the face, and he hits the back of his head on the bar, and he dies.
And he dies.
And he dies. So that was one of the stories that I had heard down in the basement when it used to be a party bar.
Well, so we have three deaths now tied to this
yes.
place, and none of them, well, one is of disease, one is... a young person, Victoria, was in her 20s.
Yes.
You know, early 20s.
In her early 20s.
Not even, maybe. But she was a young woman. And her child, she had a child.
Mm-hmm.
And so, there's ample room for interpretation that this is a haunting. But then there's even a story of... there's an insane, as I would like to call them, insane. It's a great route
and
to a haunting.
And you also taught me this story.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Awesome. Crazy.
It's long, and I want to get more into it, but there was an Elmore County prosecutor, and his name was Vern L. Taylor. And he had an office in this hotel. And again, I tried to find an address, but it doesn't say what the address was, so I can find out, like, maybe what side of the hotel it was on or whatnot. I just know there was office space. And so this was, what, in the 1920s, 21, I believe, he goes on and he has, he develops paranoia over a group of, you know, I would say stalwart citizens of Mountain Home, including one lawyer, Daniel McLaughlin. And he was a defense attorney, and he had faced Vern L. Taylor in court. But anyway, he started thinking that his enemy was Daniel McLaughlin, and that Dan and this group of businessmen had hidden a watch that he supposedly, they're going to say he stole, and that they hid it in his office in this building so that they basically would be able to frame him for stealing it. And so he constantly looked for this watch. And when he couldn't find it here, he'd go to their apartments, and he'd be seen all over his own house, like going in the attic and looking, doing weird things. And he'd come in here at all times of night. And there was a clerk that had worked here for 19 years. Wow. And he had been in here. His name was Norman Davison. And so he dies in 1926. But before that happens, he talks about this story. And he said that Taylor would come in and just rip apart his office, ransack the place, mm-hmm. search all over the hotel at all hours of the day and night, just going crazy and saying, "Do you hear that ticking? Do you hear that ticking?" And so basically he ends up somewhere outside of a furniture shop and a coffin shop.
And the coffin shop. I forgot about the coffin shop. Yeah.
And he ends up, McLaughlin's out on the front end of this business on the sidewalk somewhere in downtown. And he goes up and he shoots McLaughlin. Oh my gosh. And then he shoots him again, and then he pistol whips him a bunch, and then he shoots him a bunch more.
Mountain Home is Wild West.
Why?
Wild West.
And this was in the 20s. That stuff is still going on.
Still happening.
And so this poor man ends up dying at a doctor's office on Main Street somewhere. And
Main Street's just like right over in here.
Right. And yeah. So this he didn't, Taylor wasn't executed because it came to be found out that he was plumb nuts. He basically thought that while he could be rational in all other ways, like, he thought these guys were going to kill him, that they were out to get him. So he saw it as he was defending himself. Well, he was in World War One, you know, so there's a lot going on. And so, you know, the PTSD, you develop a lot of paranoia. And he ends up going over to, you know, where to Washington State, and he goes to Fort Lewis area, and they get him checked out, and eventually he goes to Blackfoot. But he, from what I have come to find out, I believe he dies a free man, because he's buried in Mountain Home, I believe. But you know, McLaughlin is, and don't say that's 100% true, because I haven't really gone into the specifics, but I do know that he goes to, you know, I don't want to say the insane asylum, but that's what they called it back then.
A mental institution. Yes, a mental institution. You know?
And so that is another reason that this was a place that caused him lots of dread. And you know, and just, he was freaked out by this place, where his paranoia was centered around his office here. And so, so those are some of the roots to some of the hauntings. But now let's talk about some of the descriptions of what has happened to you. I don't know if you know what happened to other people, but you described some of that.
I do have some experiences that other people have had, that when I've talked to them, like neighbors that I've had, because I've been here for a while.
Right.
And then I also have my own experiences.
Okay.
So I think moving day, it kind of started off with my upstairs neighbors who were moving out saying, I was like, and I was just curious, you know, it's an old building. I've always been into spooky history. So I was like, hey, has there been anything that's ever, like, weird happened to you before? And the girls, they were two air women, and they looked at each other, and they're like, we've had a nightmare every single day since we've been here. And that was kind of the start, was me coming in here. Even though I haven't had a whole bunch of negative experiences, I've had a few of them, but not to that extreme. So they believe they were on the third floor, and I'm not, so it's just like, maybe there's some third floor stuff going on.
Right.
And then I had an upstairs neighbor also who said that, like, she had bottles fly off her shelves a few times, which I don't like. But with my stuff, I had my first experience on my 23rd birthday party. I would say I had my party. There was a lot of, like, nice, joyous activity, and then everybody had left and gone home the very next day. I was cleaning up. There was nobody else. I don't even think I had music on. That's how quiet it was, because I was just cleaning up.
Right.
And I started hearing voices and, like, chattering. Couldn't make out a conversation. It felt like glasses were being put down onto counters. And it sounded like there was a party going on. And I was, like, a little confused, but I start walking towards my dining room slash like living room kitchen area, and I peek my head around the corner, and the party stops.
Oh wow! And it wasn't Hall and Oates.
It was not Hall and Oates. Thank God, that was bursting through the floor. Yeah, but yeah. No, it was a party, and it was happening in my apartment.
Oh wow, that is creepy.
It was very creepy, and that was like my very first experience, and that was like maybe the third month after living in here.
Well, yeah, because when you talk about these things that happen now, you know, I'm like, I like your apartment, but I'm also kind of like, oh, gosh, I'm glad I'm not going
to
sleep here.
Oh, really? I'm sorry. I wanted to be, like, welcoming. But, like, my dad says the same thing whenever he stays with me. And he's like, sometimes I'll just wake up in the middle of the night and I'll get, like, a kooky, weird feeling.
No, I don't feel weird. I feel like I could hang out in this apartment and read and it's comfortable. Mm-hmm. I feel like it's comfortable. I just knowing, like, you've had these things happen. And so when you describe some of your stories, you're, like, very kind of like, yeah, well, this happened. Whereas I would be definitely, like, closing my eyes and thinking, like, what is here?
What is happening? Exactly. Right. I know it, but other people may not.
Well, and right? So you had that. You had the party.
I had the party. Next, I didn't have some orbs try and, like, show up in some videos happening around Christmas time.
Okay.
It was in this little dining hutch area. Gypsy was not leaving a corner alone. She was sniffing around it. I had moved her to a different room, but she was infatuated with that corner over there.
It's a beautiful piece of furniture.
Thank you. It's a beautiful piece of furniture.
It really but is.
She was not leaving it alone to the point where I started video recording her, and it's very slight, but there is a picture of an orb flying from the floor to the ceiling. And she, when that happens, she like shakes her head a little bit and just kind of like reacts in a way. She wasn't hissing, but she was really infatuated with it.
Yeah, you know, I think it might be that Victoria. I don't know.
Yeah. I did have, this is a weird one, I did have an ex-boyfriend who did not believe in ghosts.
Yes.
And so when I moved out here, he did audibly say aloud when this very close to this event happened, he's like, I don't believe in it. And I was just like, okay, that sounds good. Wow. And he was working at a store, like an electronic store during this time, and he had an Apple Pen tip. And one day at work, he loses the Apple Pen tip. He says that he watched it roll underneath a desk, and him and his coworkers, like, we're on their hands and knees trying to find this pen tip. He gets frustrated to the point where he buys a new one and replaces it that day. And then he came out to visit me that evening.
Okay.
I believe after he had come in, we had settled. I was in the kitchen doing something. And he comes back into the living room and he exclaims. He goes like, oh my gosh. I'm like, what? What's going on? And he tells me the story of the pen tip. And he shows me the pen tip on his actual Apple pen. And then he shows me the one that had gone on underneath the desk.
No,
it was
goodness.
Sitting on top of his iPad right there as if somebody had left it there. But he's like, I lost this at work. There was no way. It was just placed right there, like playing a trick on him. So, and that was in Boise.
His work was in Boise.
Man. And this is, so
it's weird.
It's weird. So that was a fun one that I was like, okay, maybe you will start to believe a little bit. Yeah, because I couldn't come up with any. He couldn't come up with any reasonings behind that one.
Right.
Some things, like a few sounds of things have fallen, but nothing has fallen. And as you know, the walls are thin.
Oh, yeah.
And you can really hear everything. So I know the sounds of my apartment, but sometimes, like, I can understand when a fall is something in my kitchen.
Right.
And so sometimes it'll be like a crashing sound, like almost glass being shattered.
But nothing
has happened. So that is one. That hasn't happened in a few years, but that was going on for a while. And I get into the habit of saying, like, no, thank you.
To this thing.
I just say, no, thank you. and usually it is settled after that.
Oh.
And then let's talk about Eva.
Oh, yeah.
So I just got done doing a Fulbright Hayes scholarship tour trip of Taiwan.
Nice.
So I'm really excited. That was a very fun trip. But on my way back, I had my friend Miranda, who had lived upstairs. I was showing her a slideshow of my trip to Taiwan. Uh-huh. And I had students that I had taught there. And I was showing her some pictures on my TV in the living room. And uh-huh. I go, these are my students, Eva and Jess. And I couldn't even say the term Jess before we both heard a disembodied voice go, I'm here. And it was a female voice. I'm here. And she knows the building as well. I was like, you go check the hallway, I'll go check outside. She's like, there's nobody in the hallway. And I was like, there's nobody inside.
And you hear people coming up
and
the stairs,
you
too.
Can hear people coming up the stairs.
Yeah, and the door open and everything.
You can hear it all. Mm. And so there's, no privacy in there, like a fishbowl in here. Ooh. But it was, we were sitting on the green couch, and it sounded like she was just standing where Gypsy is laying right over there. It goes, I'm here. So
that's
not
like 5 feet.
5 feet. Sounds like somebody was in the room with us saying
can
that.
Can your cat talk?
She cannot.
Okay. Nope.
So I had asked Miranda, who do you think it was? Do you think it was an Eva or do you think it was a Jess? And Miranda said, Eva. Hmm. And so I had done a little bit of research. We had talked about you coming out. And so like, well, I'll do a little bit of background history of the building just as a refresher. And I had read, Jose had some children.
Oh.
And he had a daughter. And I had no previous knowledge to this before. But his daughter's name was Eva.
Oh.
I know. It was insane. Crazy. Do-do-do-do-do. Yeah, of all of the names in all the world, Eva.
Well, and this is a big apartment.
It is a large apartment.
Was it the living space?
Was it a living space for her? Was it a play area? Because she was born in 1912. She was 91 when she passed away, I think. Died in 2007, I think is when it
That's
was.
That's a good long run.
Yeah, she had a good long run.
Yeah.
Not buried in Mountain Home. Tried to do her find a grave. I think she's out in Utah.
Okay.
Is where she had settled. But I think she spent her childhood out here.
Oh, wow. That's,
yes.
That's cool. That's a nice little... That's a good connect. We get to see what her death certificate says.
Yes.
But no, I mean, it wouldn't be... it would be in Utah probably, right? So,
right. Yeah. And one of my most recent was on about an embroidery hoop. So I had a gentleman caller over, and he had fallen asleep on my couch, and to the point where he was, like, passed out, very, very tired. And I had this embroidery hoop that says, home sweet effing home on it.
Right, yeah.
And I had also fallen asleep, but this embroidery hoop was on the shelf above, and it does not move. It was not going to rock anywhere.
Right.
If it had fallen, it would have fallen forward and not in the place in where it showed up when I had woken. When I woke up from a nap, it was crooked in the arm of my gentleman caller.
Yeah.
And just was just suspended there.
I've seen the photos.
Stayed there. You saw the photos. And I think we both tried it out as far as like, no matter how many ways that it could have fallen, it would not have shown up as far away as it did with the letters pointing up perfectly, home sweet home.
Yeah, right. I mean, it is, seeing where it usually was, that it would take one heck of a, it just wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
Because it would have to, float down.
It would have had to float down. Right. It would have to been picked up and moved. It would have had to have gone somewhere.
Unless he was playing a trick on you, but
he would have had to move me.
Oh, because
to get there. So it was it was a strange.
Yeah.
And then most recently is I was getting ready for school, about half asleep, of course, but I had heard some disembodied whistling in my room a few weeks ago, just happy whistling, and I don't know why, but that one freaks me out quite a bit. And that was after we had done our first recording.
Yeah, after I'd come here, and you sent me some video of your cat doing something in the corner.
Yeah, that was the orbs that I had tried to,
and
so with her shaking, and so it was really difficult to see, but maybe I can try and show that to you.
No, I'll watch again, and I'm going to put it if you're okay with it.
That's totally fine.
On TikTok and Instagram. Awesome. Facebook too, maybe. So you got a lot of smoke, you know, and there's some logs that we got here, you know, that are root to our story. And by logs, I mean dead people. Okay.
Dead people.
Connected to this place. You have those that died here. You have those that died elsewhere but loved this place. You have those who died elsewhere and hated this place, like our friend Taylor.
Right.
The lawyer. So, I mean, there's lots of reasons why this could happen. And here's the other thing. I didn't look as fully. I didn't do a deep. I did a deep dive, but I didn't go the full 9 yards, like where I would look at all the different addresses this place has had.
Right.
All the ways people have referred to this and tried to find, like, actual notes about this place. So, yeah, okay. So, as far as ghosts go and deaths here or, characters who and figures who love this place, we didn't do a deep, deep dive. But I did do a deep enough dive, you know. And sometimes you just got to stop somewhere.
Yes.
If you're not getting paid for it or writing a book, you know. But we don't know what else has happened here. We just know that there has been plenty of activity. And tons of people pass through this place.
Yes.
And
a lot of the sources are from word of mouth. So, like, people who have worked here before or have lived a long time here. But there's also the Mount Home History Museum.
Right.
Which is an old Carnegie Library, which, you know, I love old Carnegie.
Oh, it's a cool. We walked down there the first time I came to visit and look at this place. And, you know, it's a very cool building. And I actually would love to come back and talk to them, too. It's a great way to learn about history.
Yes.
To look into a haunting of a historic location. And so my question for you, I know what I feel about it to end this podcast, is why is haunted history good history and why should it be taken seriously?
That's such a good question. As a teacher, I feel like haunted history is a great starting point to get somebody interested in history.
Yeah.
And I feel like hauntings can be sometimes a universal experience as a way to, like, connect with other people.
Right.
But haunted history is good history because it delves into some diverse areas, such as, like, Basque history.
Right, exactly.
Maybe more, like, lesser-known history, which is, like, lower-income Basques, immigrants. And so I feel like some of their stories get told as well as in comparison to a lot of the popular stories of history that might be overshadowing others.
Right, I think so. Like, one of the things I thought about with this question was there's a plantation either in Mississippi or Alabama, and there are these pictures of an enslaved woman there and a ghost.
Yeah.
And, she pops up in these different places, and so it's like, well, okay, well, that's a great way to talk about, well, why is she there?
Yeah.
Why? Exactly. How did she die? Why does she still linger
there? Why is
there?
She not resting?
Yeah. Well, and then we talk about the turmoil that happened there, and if you do die somewhere else, but you kind of, like, are somewhat attracted or brought back to the place where you did the most extreme living, whether happy or horrible, there's a lot to believe that, these places where horrible things happen, whether they're battlefields or, you know, plantations or, factories where people had
red light districts. Yes.
Yeah.
Hotels. There's a lot of atrocities that happen in hotels.
At hotels, yeah. But, yep. I feel like at least at this hotel, most of the activity or the stories
it's mostly positive, yes.
Yeah, I don't know how Victoria had a brain hemorrhage or cerebral hemorrhage, but...
And that's what's so sad is maybe we'll never know.
Right, I looked and I looked and I could not find. I tried all the different ways of her names. I tried to find a death certificate for her, and I'll try again, or maybe not. I got a lot to do.
Right,
but I hope this has been fun for you.
Absolutely, it's been a blast.
It's been fun to come and see your amazing furniture.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Your that hutch, China hutch, right?
Yes, it is the China hutch. Fantastic. It is 1873. I believe.
1873.
Cool. 1873.
Yes. That is so cool. My folks would all get someday have a They have an old clock from made in Holland. Sweden.
Sweden.
It dates back to 1802.
Mm-hmm.
And it is fantastic. So when they give it to me, I'm going to sell it. Just kidding. Or give it to a museum.
Give it to a museum. Yeah. Put it in a museum.
Right.
Yeah.
We'll see. But anyway.
Do you want to talk about your book?
Oh, yeah. You know,
you just have a recent publication. Congratulations.
Right. Yeah. Haunted Boise by Mark Iverson and, my ex-podcast co-host, Jeff Wade. And it's got some good stories in it. I just sold 32 books last night.
Wow, congratulations.
Right. I only have 32 left is what I meant to say.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I
sold still congratulations.
18 plus 15. So what is that? 28? That's 32, isn't it?
That's spooky.
18 plus 15? Yeah.
I teach history, not math. I'm just kidding.
Yeah, that's 33. Yeah, 33. And so...
That was almost really spooky.
Right. Yeah, jeez. These guys and their math. But, so I had this great event last night at the Lit Room. It's a new bookstore in Garden City. And I'm going to be on... I was on the news. Jeff and I were on Good Morning Idaho. Or no, Wake Up Idaho on KTVV.
Awesome.
And they were wonderful hosts. And then I'm going to be giving presentations at four different locations, again, with on KTBV's 208. And so I'm going to record next week, and then we're going to, or they're going to air them 4 days in a row the week before Halloween. So
that's really exciting.
I'm succeeding. I'm nerding out. I'm continuing. We got this podcast done after some technical difficulties and some Hall & Oates and cat thumpings.
Oh, my gosh.
But it's been fun.
It has been a journey.
right.
I'm glad that you got to talk about your work. Something that I'm excited for is the passing of my project proposal, hopefully will be a publication at some point in its life, which will be a fashion lookbook of the oldest women's federated club in Idaho, the Boise Columbian Club.
Oh, cool. Yeah, yeah.
And telling their history through the history of fashion.
A storied and important organization.
Yes.
You got another thing on your resume, this podcast.
That's true.
And, that's public history.
Yep.
What you're doing is public history. Oh,
Ida history is public history.
Ida history is public history. So this has been fun. I wish you good well.
Thank you. And hopefully...
Well, or good night.
And hopefully nothing attaches to you when you go home.
Oh, it's too... I've been to some creepy places.
Yeah, no attachments.
Yeah, no attachments so far that I know of.
Awesome.
But tune in next week. We'll have more hauntings. We're going to go to the Crescent Brewery in Napa and hear some of the tales, talk a little bit about their history and why might that place be haunted in Napa. Great beer, too.
Awesome. So, thank you, Mark.
Thank you.